Despite these suggestive findings, several hundred million courses of chloroquine have been used worldwide, making it one of the most widely used drugs in history, without reports of arrhythmic death. Ah, come on. And I think they're not reporting, they're going back to WHO surveillance, and I don't know if that four references the same one. Maybe it does. But this is pretty damaging, don't you think? Right? So we have, this is the data. This is the actual data we have. There are hundreds of millions of doses administered, and we don't have any reports of sudden unexplained death. The American College of Cardiology is saying the same thing. That's where they're out on it. But meanwhile, you got the Mayo Clinic saying this. You got the NIH panel recommending against that. You got all these articles and dozens more. I honestly don't know what's happening here. I don't know what's going on, but it's not science or medicine as I understand them. And if and when, I'm not saying it will be, but if and when hydroxychloroquine is proven to work and actually save lives, this stance will have cost lives, many lives, lots of lives, mass deaths sorts of lives. So I just wanted to raise that because I don't know what's going on here, but it ain't science and it's driving me a little bit batty. Hello, everyone. Boy, have I got an explosive episode for you today. This is Friday, April 24th. This one's going to carry you through the weekend because I am taking the weekend off. I got a lot of gardening to do. We're finally going to get some sun tomorrow, which is going to be great. Cold April here in Western Massachusetts. This is your SARS-CoV-2 daily update, day 92, calling this one bad science or something worse. And by worse, I mean sinister. Now, I want to turn our attention now to hydroxychloroquine. Because again, there's a couple of things going on here. One, we're seeing some very bad science and also some demonization of it in the media, which, and by the way, I'm not here to say it works or it doesn't work. We've seen data that suggests it does work in studies that I tend to trust. I'm saying, wow, it seems to work. Remember, and that involved getting it into the patient as early as possible and not waiting for a test if necessary, which is what the Brazil study did, which, you know, if you don't have the test or you can't wait for the results, just prophylactically get that stuff in there with azithromycin, and you see vastly improved outcomes. All right, you know, half the rates of hospitalization, and we're getting other data too, which is starting to come in. And but given that, though, you would think, well, why not just give that stuff? I mean, if somebody's showing up, why not just give it? And all of a sudden, we're seeing stuff like this come out, right? The Mayo Clinic. Wow, this is world leading. The Mayo Clinic cardiologists. I don't think there's anybody better, right? Inexcusable to ignore hydroxychloroquine side effects. While safe for most, the drug carries serious side effects for some, including sudden cardiac arrest. Yeah, that sounds pretty bad. So let's take a quick tour here. The FDA and the poison control, there's other people coming out with stuff. So I'm going to skip over now to a website. Here's the FDA. This just came out a couple days ago. FDA cautions against use of hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine for COVID-19 outside of the hospital setting or a clinical trial due to risk of heart rhythm problems. That sounds pretty bad. Let's go down, because what I want to know now is we want to find the risk. I mean, what is the risk? So everybody said it's risky. The Mayo Clinic says it's risky. I'll show you a bunch more people coming out saying, oh my God, the risk of this stuff. So the FDA says it's just risky. Due to risk, right here. Due to risk. Okay, what are the risks? FDA ought to set us straight here. Let's see what we got here. What safety concern is the FDA announcing? Okay, the FDA is aware of reports of serious heart rhythm problems. Okay, but wait. How much? We're also aware of increased use. Okay, so if you have reports and increased use, you're going to have more of these. Therefore, we would like to remind healthcare professionals of patients of the known risk. Yes, remind me, what are the risks? What is it? Is it a 0.1% risk? Is it a 1,000,000%? You know, what do we got? We will continue to investigate risks. There it is again. There's that word. But how much? How much? Okay, what's the FDA doing? That doesn't tell us anything. How can they help me? That won't tell us anything. What should do? What did the FDA find? Yes, what did they find? Let's get in here. All right, what did they find? We have reviewed case reports. Good. Okay, we're going to get down to it now. In the FDA Adverse Event Reporting System database, the published medical literature in the American Association of Poison Control Centers, National Poison Data System. Good. Maybe we'll go there and see what's coming on. What's the data concerning serious heart-related adverse events and death in patients either alone? Wait, there are no data yet. These adverse events were reported. These adverse events, look at that, that's plural, were reported from the hospital and outpatient settings for treating or preventing COVID-19, including QT interval prolongation, ventricular tachycardia, ventricular fibrillation, some cases death. Oh, some cases death. There we go. We are continuing to investigate these safety risks and will communicate publicly when more information is available. Wait a minute. This is supposed to be what did the FDA find? Where's the finding? Where's my data? What's the risk? How many deaths? In some cases, death. Is that two cases? Is it 3,000? What are we talking about? Sadly, I went through the entire website here on the FDA and there was nothing. Zero. So quick, let's jump over now to poison control here. Look at this, right up here, poison.org. Chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine can have serious side effects. Oh, all right, let's get there, because poison control is going to be all about this, right? Two old drugs used for malaria, chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine, are being studied. Side effects from these drugs can be very serious and include irregular heart rhythms that can result in death. Well, that's not helpful. When? Nope, nothing there. Nope, that's about how the virus gets in. It's about the virus itself. Come on. Where's my chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine safety data? Give it to me. Okay. Nope, nothing here. Chloroquine. Ah, here we go. They have major drug interactions with other medicines that can put a person at an even greater risk of an abnormal heart rhythm. For example, a commonly used antibiotic, azithromycin, is also being investigated for a possible benefit in treating COVID-19, but it has a known major drug interaction with chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. No data. Does it happen sometimes, lots of times? How many deaths do we have? We have nothing. Thank you, Pila Soto. You wrote a big, giant thing, but you didn't tell us. There's nothing I could use here. Nothing that I could use as a doctor, if I were one, to help me understand or assess what the risk is. So let's continue our search, because there's got to be something here to tell us what the actual risk of hydroxychloroquine is. Ah, here we go. Check this out. This is from the CDC you see up there, malaria resources. But this comes out pre-COVID. So I was kind of interested, what can we find pre-COVID? So here we find from the CDC, what is hydroxychloroquine? Tells us all this stuff, got really nice, who should not take hydroxychloroquine? Great, they're probably going to tell me about those heart patients, right? Oh, this is odd. People with psoriasis should not take it? Well, dude, where's the major risk? This sounds like really risky stuff. Where is it? Let's go down a little further. Here we go. Will it interact with my other medications? Some drugs can interact with hydroxychloroquine and cause problems. Your doctor's responsible for evaluating. But nothing too serious there. What are some side effects? Ah, here we go. How long is it safe to use? CDC has no limits on the use of hydroxychloroquine for the prevention of malaria. No limits. I thought this stuff was dangerous. Well, hold on. Let's go back here. Just a minute. I didn't find anything useful there, so let's continue on. How about this? Hydroxychloroquine is suddenly very, very dangerous. Look at this. I just Googled this. This is my search term. Hydroxychloroquine, cardiac, QT risk, because that seems to be the actual risk, the prolongation of the QT. I'll tell you what that is in just a second. Check this out. All these things are coming post-COVID now. Ventricular arrhythmia risk due to hydroxychloroquine from the cardiologist association there. From NIH, cardiovascular risks of hydroxychloroquine and treatment. Patients at high risk of HCQ-induced QT. Okay, caution. Recommended on COVID-19 treatment with hydroxychloroquine that's from heart.org there. Long QT and hydroxychloroquine, poorly recognized risk. Okay. A recent study has shown that patients are 40% more likely to develop atrial fibrillation. At least we're getting some data there. Let's check into that in just a second. Cardiology groups push back on hydroxychloroquine. Look at this. Everybody's saying this thing is a giant risk. Now, you know why I'm investigating this like this? Because I've been around a long time and I've traveled to countries with malaria and I've heard about taking chloroquine and never once has anybody said, oh my God, you know, the chance of dying from a heart thing is pretty high. It's 1%, it's 5%, it's a known thing. I've actually never heard it, and I'm a pretty observant guy. And so it confused me to suddenly find out that all these different heart organizations in the United States in particular were suddenly advising against hydroxychloroquine because of its massive risk profile. So let's just understand risk and drugs and things for a real second. Then I'm going to get back into this because it's a really explosive story, I think. Pharmacology and toxicology. Let's look at this. So first up, when you give something, you're increasing the dose of something along this axis here. And then there's some sort of a response you're looking for up on this axis. So maybe you're giving an increasing dose of a compound that helps lower blood pressure. And you're looking for the response. You're hoping to drop blood pressure by, I don't know, 10 millimeters of mercury or something like that. And so as you give more and more and more of the dose, you tend to get a curve that looks like this, these S curves right here, right? A dose response curve. They tend to look just like this. And you have an ED10, which is an effective dose, does about 10% of what you want it to do. That would be your ED10. Then there's an effective dose where you get about 50% of your response. And then way up here, you might get 90% of your response with an increasing dose. And as you increase this dose like this, you might also find that there's a toxic dose that exists out here. You keep increasing the dose and about 10% toxic endpoints are showing up. Okay, and that's just some sort of toxicity. You know, the blood pressure's dropped far too low at this point in time, has caused complications for somebody, or you're giving up maybe an anticoagulant, and all of a sudden there's some unacceptable amount of bleeding in a subset of your patients. That would start happening out here at this dose, and by the time you get all the way out to this dose, right now you got 50% trouble in whatever the response is you're measuring in your patient set, or here's where a toxic dose where you get 90% of everybody are experiencing it is very bad. Okay, so that's a standard dose response curve. And of course, there's one more curve that goes beyond this too, which is the lethal dose, right? There's three curves, your therapeutic effect, your effective dose here, you got your toxic dose, and then you got your lethal dose. And the LD50 is when at that dose, 50% of all people or lab rats or whatever you're studying, that's where 50% of them die. Okay. And what you want to see is you want all these curves to be really far apart like this so that there's a big safety profile. What would be a complete mess is if your LD50 curve was like right here. You know, that creates a lot of trouble for you because you have very minor dosing. So when you look at it this way, it turns out that hydroxychloroquine actually has a pretty wide set of dose curves and pretty well known with 70 years of study around it. So let's take a quick look at this. Dangerous HCQ side effects. We keep hearing about all of these in media. What are they? Stop using this medicine if you call your doctor at once. If you have ringing in your ears or confusion, hallucinations, rapid breathing, seizure, nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, bloody or tarry stool, sounds awful. Coughing up blood or vomit looks like coffee grounds. Fevers, swelling. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I got that wrong. That's aspirin. My point here as a toxicologist, not to fool you like that, is that every drug has both a therapeutic dose, an effective dose, or an effective dose, a toxic dose, and then a lethal dose. And so here, what we're looking at here is some side effects that can happen, including severe allergic reactions to aspirin is one, which could cause difficulty breathing, swelling at your face, lips, throat, or tongue. To simply come out and say that hydroxychloroquine has side effects is a really inappropriate thing to say here. It's inexcusably inappropriate, possibly, because every drug has side effects, including, of course, aspirin, right? So the question is, what are hydroxychloroquine side effects? So I go to this other site, and this is actually hydroxychloroquine this time, no fooling. And so when I went to this site, which again, I'm pulling this pre-COVID, before they knew how dangerous this was suddenly. This is based on 70 years of data. Look what's listed on a site that collected pretty much what we know about side effects and risks in hydroxychloroquine. Side effects aren't common. However, they can cause skin rashes, especially those made worse by sunlight, feeling sick, nausea or indigestion, diarrhea, headaches, bleaching of the hair or mild hair loss. Well, that's inexcusable. I can't take any more of that myself. Tinnitus, ringing in the ears, visual problems. Huh? There's a small risk that hydroxychloroquine can damage a part of the inside of the eye called the retina, and this increases with long-term use and higher dosage. There's nothing in here about a big, dangerous QT prolongation that leads to sudden cardiac arrest, all right? It's. I'm not saying it's not a thing. It is a thing, but it wasn't even large enough for a site webpage dedicated to hydroxychloroquine to even mention it in their main side effects and risks. So that's kind of odd, right? So what the heck is going on here, we have to ask, because it just came out on April 21st that the NIH panel recommends against drug combination promoted by Trump for COVID-19. This is an NPR, so they had to make it about Trump. Of course, it's not political. Remember, this isn't left-right. It's up-down. Is this good science or not? A panel of experts convened by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, of course, that's the thing headed by Fauci, recommends against doctors using a combination of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin for the treatment of COVID-19 patients because of potential toxicities. The combination of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin was associated with QTC prolongation in patients with COVID-19, the panel said. QTC prolongation increases the risk of sudden cardiac death. How much risk? At any rate, you know, you got a normal heart rhythm, looks like this. You're watching the machine go, bing, as it, you know, bloop, bloop, as you your heart rhythm gets traced out. There are all these different subcomponents of the heartbeat. And you got your P interval, you got your little Q dip here, you got the R, you got the S, the T, P, Q, R, S, D, right? And this is your QT interval, this thing right here. And what they're saying is it prolongs this. It makes this interval longer, it stretches it out this way, right? And that a prolongation of that can be associated with a risk of sudden cardiac death. And I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just wondering, what is the actual risk? So it's all based on data, said panel member Dr. Susan Swindles, a professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at University of Nebraska College of Medicine. I assume that's medicine. We just plowed through everything that was, and apart from supportive care, there wasn't anything that was working terribly well. Really? That's odd, because I'm pretty sure that HCQ delivered early is showing pretty positive results. Plasma therapy, that's the antibody therapy where you take somebody who's been exposed and you pull out their blood, you separate the red blood cells, you deliver the plasma, which has their antibodies against coronavirus in it. That seems to work really well. Solid data there as well. The immune boosters, vitamin D3, C, a little zinc, a little elderberry, maybe some quercetin to get that zinc inside your cell. Those things all seem to work as well. I'm not sure, you know, again, not medical advice, but these would be things, you know, apart from supportive care. What do you mean, like ventilators and giving people like painkillers? So, nah, there's things we know that work. I can't support that at all. And by the way, I'm sure you've seen it before, but my personal immune booster supplements, again, not medical advice, but there's the quercetin. This is the form of zinc I take, and D3. This is all I do this especially. I hit these two hard when I think I, you know, might have been exposed. If and vitamin C, of course, I think is a great daily thing. N-acetylcysteine, which is very good for if you actually have an illness. This helps mop up all those free radicals, especially, see, the free radical protection is what they say on there. If you are having a cytokine storm, this would be a great thing to help mop up the parts that are overly ambitious and actually damaging you rather than helping. And my main go-to during flu season is elderberry. This Gobble Mountain Elderberry Company makes great stuff. This first tickle in the throat, take a little of that. It's been working for me great for years. All right. Well, you know what else gives you risks of dangerous heart arrhythmias? The Super Bowl. Check this out. But at least this article's given me risks that I can quantify. Unlike all the way back here, it's just like, dude, where's my risk? What is the risk? We don't know what the risks are. Nobody's telling us anything. We're not getting numbers. Again, what do you know? So check this out. A recent German study found viewing stressful World Cup soccer match led to increased cardiovascular events for fans of the losing team. U.S. researchers wanted to see if similar results would occur with a major American sporting event. They analyzed data on all-cause death rates from L.A. County for the day of the game and the following 2 weeks after the game, and then compared it to other similar periods but without games in them. Researchers found a 22% increase in circulatory deaths and a 17% increase in overall deaths in the Super Bowl losing year compared to control years. Oh, man, that's terrible. Yeah. So, but guess what? That at least here now we understand what the risk is and we can evaluate it. If the Super Bowl was a medicine, you can be sure the FDA and the NIH would be against it, right? Nope, there's chirping crickets on that. Watch. That's because there's a lot of ads. You know, you sell a lot of stuff during a Super Bowl. So they're kind of mysteriously silent on that. All right, so I kept digging. I'm like, come on, get me the risk profile for this stuff. I had to dig and dig. And by the way, I couldn't find anything from the post-COVID period. They were all junk articles that basically talked about an increased risk. I couldn't find a single quantification of the risk. So I had to constrain the search parameter in Google to a pre-COVID period. And I pulled up this beauty right here, which was a gigantic meta review of the chloroquine toxicity as well as other antimalarials. This comes out of the WHO. It was delivered March 17th. Big giant document. 60 to 70 references to chloroquine in it. So I trolled through this thing and said, all right, what do we got? Well, let's start with the conclusions. Key conclusions were, apart from halofenitrine, the oral antimalarial drugs, particularly chloroquine and piperaquine, have been used extensively with very few reports of cardiotoxicity? Huh. Rapid parenteral administration of chloroquine may cause life-threatening hypotension. That's what those dummies in Arizona did when they, the husband-wife team, they have parenteral means you took it into your body through your mouth. And it went down into your body cavity. That can cause life-threatening stuff. Rapid, meaning you're taking it all at once and taking an overdose. So yes, it's got toxicity, like everything. So there is a dose of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine you can take where you might find your LD50. Given that the husband and wife team, the husband died, the wife didn't. I think they found the LD50 dose all on their own doing that. So at any rate, not to make light of that, but it's really, you're a dummy if you're taking too much of a drug that you know nothing about. At any rate, conclusions and recommendations from this particular giant article on this stuff. Look at this. What is the frequency? This is all I was searching for. I wanted to know, what's the frequency of sudden death attributable to the cardiotoxicity of different antimalarial medicines? Now, this is where it's going to show up. We're going to find tons of data in here because we're finding out from all these super esteemed people, all these doctors and heart organizations, just how dangerous this stuff is. The NIAID is telling us it's dangerous. Mayo Clinic's telling us it's dangerous. So let's get in there and find out how dangerous this is. All right. Despite hundreds of millions of doses administered in the treatment of malaria, there have been no reports of sudden unexplained death associated with quinine, chloroquine, or amodiaquine, although each drug causes QT-QTC interval prolongation. What? So it causes this stuff, but we have hundreds of millions of doses and we have no reports of sudden unexplained death? What? That's weird. Maybe the FDA ought to be reviewing this rather than whatever they're putting in, stuffing into their database. This is interesting. So let me go over to the American College of Cardiology because they're looking into this stuff. In March, they looked into this arrhythmogenicity of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. All right, drug-induced QT prolongation has long served as a surrogate indicator for increased risk of drug-associated torsades de pointes, TDP, a potentially lethal polymorphic ventricular tachycardia. Polymorphic's got a lot of different shapes to it. It served as a surrogate indicator of an increased risk, right? So QT prolongation doesn't kill you itself, but it can lead to or is associated with an increased risk of getting into torsade de pointe, which can be a fairly fatal ventricular tachycardia. However, the relationship between QT prolongation and risk of TDP is imperfect and complex. That means it's probably got a sort of a correlation, but not super awesome, and we don't get it yet. The risk of TDP is not a linear function of QT duration, nor the extent of change. Huh. Some drugs which prolong QTC are not associated with increased arrhythmic death. Oh, you mean like potentially drugs which are delivered in hundreds of millions of doses, which do have some QT-QTC prolongation, but have no reports of sudden unexplained death? You mean like those kinds? Maybe. Although only a small proportion of patients with QTC prolongation suffer TDP, drug-associated QT prolongation is associated with increased arrhythmic and non-arrhythmic mortality. Despite these suggestive findings, several hundred million courses of chloroquine have been used worldwide, making it one of the most widely used drugs in history, without reports of arrhythmic death. Ah, come on. And they're going back to WHO surveillance, and I don't know if that four references the same one. Maybe it does. But this is pretty damaging, don't you think? Right? So we have, this is the data. This is the actual data we have. There are hundreds of millions of doses administered, and we don't have any reports of sudden unexplained death. The American College of Cardiology is saying the same thing. That's where they're out on it. But meanwhile, you got the Mayo Clinic saying this. You got the NIH panel recommending against that. You got all these articles and dozens more. I honestly don't know what's happening here. I don't know what's going on, but it's not science or medicine as I understand them. And if and when, I'm not saying it will be, but if and when hydroxychloroquine is proven to work and actually save lives, this stance will have cost lives, many lives, lots of lives, mass deaths sorts of lives. So I just wanted to raise that because I don't know what's going on here, but it ain't science and it's driving me a little bit batty. All right, I'm shifting gears now. In a wonderful way, too. In response to yesterday's video, you know, I had that up-down axis and talked about integrity at the top, and I had chaos at the bottom. And what was great, some other people weighed in. Calvin Vanderveen here wrote in with integrity is to do the right thing even when no one is looking, following an internalized code of ethics without compromise. Humility, to remain teachable and open-minded, knowing that you do not know it all. Yeah. See, yes, I agree with that. To do the right thing even when no one is looking. That's another great definition of integrity. And somebody responded to that and said, well, wait a minute, isn't that morals? And I thought Electrocute here had a great framing on that and said, well, morals are things we all have. And what is moral and immoral differs from person to person. But to stand by your morals, whatever they are, even when violating against them is beneficial to you, is to have integrity. And I agree with that. I think that's a great definition. And going even further, Never Ben Jones really caught me here by saying, I would suggest that for the purpose of your model, the opposite of integrity is not chaos, but ideology, rigidity of belief. And that struck me. I was like, you know what? That's actually right. And you know what's fascinating about that? Just this morning, again, at Peak Prosperity, again, Dave DD, twice. Dude, you really rocked it today. Showed up yesterday providing a link to this article, which I loved, which showed that extreme Democratic and Republican partisans display greater mental rigidity on cognitive tests. So this is from August 2019's Cognitive Science article. Rigidity and ideology. New research provides evidence that extreme partisanship on both the political left and the right is related to cognitive inflexibility. Our findings, which appear in the Journal of Experimental Psychology, General, indicate that people's political identity is influenced by how they process basic information. In the study, we invited 750 U.S. citizens to complete multiple objective neuropsychological tests that allow us to measure their individual levels of cognitive rigidity and flexibility. We found that individuals who are extremely attached to the Democratic Party or to the Republican Party display greater mental rigidity on these cognitive tests relative to those who are only moderately or weakly attached. Regardless of the direction and content of their political beliefs, extreme partisans had a similar cognitive profile. You know what I think is going on here? I actually think this has to do with rigidity, ideological rigidity, not with the data, because the data, it's right there. I found it in minutes. I got an internet connection, and this isn't my area of specialty, and I don't sit on, you know, these esteemed panels here like Susan and Dr. Fauci and the other people on here, but, you know, they say it's all based on the data. Well, what data? You know, we got data. This is the data, right? The data says hundreds of millions of doses administered, and despite QTC interval prolongation, there were no reports of sudden unexplained death associated with chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine. Okay? That's the data. So I would suggest that it's ideological rigidity that's preventing people from seeing what's going on here, I think. And so I think this is exposes the degree to which we've got a dangerous left-right polarization. I'm trying my best to engage a new conversation which goes up and down, and it's not integrity to chaos anymore. It is, thanks to Never Ben Jones, integrity on the top, ideological rigidity down on the bottom. And of course, you can have people of great integrity from both parties, and you can both have also have people of great ideological rigidity from both parties, preventing you from seeing what is really, truly there. So thank you so much for that, Never Ben Jones. That is now part of this framework for sure, forever. Hey, guess what? Adam mentioned it at the end yesterday. Let me draw it out just a little bit further. Special offer, download our book Prosper for free. You can just click this link and you can get a PDF download. I'm just going to take you through a tiny piece of what's in there. And we talk about resilience and preparation, and people who had followed what's in our book Prosper are in far better shape today to manage and weather and be resilient to the economic shocks that are coming along and the psychological shocks and emotional shocks, financial shocks, all of them. People who read Prosper are in far better shape. And we have the anecdotes to prove it, because people write in and tell us all the time how thankful they are they ran into this. So in that book, from page 11, here's just an example. We distinguish between selfless and selfish. Another objection we hear to the prospect of preparing and becoming more resilient is that those actions could be seen as being selfish. Instead, we see them as being selfless. Those who are not prepared when an emergency strikes are a drain on critical resources, while those who are prepared can be of assistance. To be among those who can be in a position to render assistance, or at least need none of their own, means that your prior acts of preparation have selflessly removed you from the minus column and placed you on the plus side. The first steps towards preparedness usually involve addressing your own needs or those of your loved ones. It's like putting on your oxygen mask first in an airplane, right? But many people then go beyond that and prepare for others who may not be able to do so, or have not done so, or maybe even will not do so. But let us put an important qualifier on that. Preparing before a crisis hits is responsible and selfless. But trying to accumulate necessary items during a crisis is an act of hoarding. We do not and never will advocate hoarding. Responsible preparations begin long before any trouble appears. Anything else stands a good chance of making things worse, not better. So that gives you a taste of what's in there. I just wanted to give you that in case that would whet your appetite, make you want to download this and read more, because it's a good book and it can really help, I think. Remember, resubscribe to this channel if necessary. Also over at any of the other social media sites that may be doing that helpful unsubscribe thing, please remember to plant a garden. And let's turn now to the conclusions here. And let me make these larger because something's not quite right. All right. First up, masks for all works. Of course it does. Obviously, but now with extra data. So that's what we're getting there. But of course, we had all the data we needed from the Czech Republic, from the other places, the mask-wearing countries. Obviously, it works. And it just, come on, logically, don't spray that viral booger all over the place. And guess what? Fewer people will get sick. Makes sense, right? Okay. The case fatality rate, CFR, and the infection fatality rate, the IFR, these are totally different concepts. People are confusing them. Let's tease them apart. Let's make sure we're using the right terminology. On this basis, the coronavirus, the honey badger virus, 20 to 40 times worse than the flu. Suddenly, all of a sudden, hydroxychloroquine is inexcusably risky. But this is after 70 years, hundreds of tons of it produced, tens of millions of exposures without any recorded heart deaths. Hey, they might have happened, but you'd think they would have shown up by now in the data, and they should have if it was a real thing. But the NIAID and the FDA warning about HCQ, they're completely unfounded based on an extensive review of the scientific literature by the WHO itself. So we have to ask ourselves, what is going on? I don't have a good answer for you. I only have bad ones. You can now download our book Prosper for free at this link right here. And remember, this is going to be a time that's going to call for extraordinary head and heart, bringing both into the game, being compassionate, being kind, being loving, being caring for everybody around us as much as we possibly can be, and also being logical, being rational, and using data every extent possible. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing here. I'm trying to raise the conversation because I don't understand what's going on with these crazy people suddenly concerned about how risky hydroxychloroquine is without ever bothering to quantitate the risk. And you know why? Because when you actually go and you look for the quantitation of that risk, you find that it isn't all that risky. So that blows their narrative up. And that means that they are, unfortunately, displaying some sort of ideological rigidity, which means they are out of integrity on that particular story. And that bothers me because we need as much integrity as we can have right now. Okay, that's all I have for today. I'll just close on this slide. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back with you on Monday, and I'm going to get a lot of things planted tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. Adam Taggart here. Chris Martinson and I are the co-founders of Peak Prosperity. If you want to get alerted whenever we release a new video from Chris, just click the red subscribe button right beneath the YouTube video player. Once you've done that, a little bell icon will appear right next to it. Click on that bell. It looks like this. And that's it. The next time we publish a video from Chris, you'll immediately receive a notification from YouTube. Thanks for watching our videos.